This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Yes, it is Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, as we welcome you in. And as I look, we're in the month of December. Down the stretch we come. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, live downtown Las Vegas there at the D. I'm Patrick Maher. We say hi. It's a Monday, a football Monday. So you know what that means. Steve Fezzik, professionally handicapper, he's going to be joining us coming up later in the program. If the 8.5 cashes tonight, so he's -8.5 with the Jags. That number to close out week 13 right now as they take a look. Let's go ahead and take a look, boys. It's sitting 10, I believe. So yeah, Jacksonville's jumped all the way up to 10 over at DraftKings. We'll get into the matchup. We've got props to play there as well. But Fezzik and Circa Millions, he'll be squawking about it here on the show. He is killing it. And if the Jags cover 8.5, he'll be in first place in Circa Millions. So Fezzik going to stop by. It looks like we're efforting for Dennis Dodd, who does a great job over at CBS Sports, national college football writer. We'll talk about the drama that transpired over the weekend as far as the college football playoff committee. And everybody I know is pissed off about that. But we do have Cincy and the Jags to close it out, boys. 5 weeks after tonight of the regular season remains. That's all. So I want to dig into the playoffs and some odds there. Just to start quickly to set the table, Samich has sent over a few plays for the family today. No Thomas Gable as of yet. I don't want to press the sports and race book director there at the Borgata, but he's been killing it with college basketball plays. The big guy's smiling because he wants to tail the plays. But we have yet to hear from Thomas Gable. Gable, if you're listening, we'll take your plays, even your B or C level plays. NBA-wise, in-season tournament, 8 teams remain. I know you two, I was going to give you a pop quiz. I know you two know this, but the group play is done. So knockout rounds, the quarterfinals. Tonight you got the Celtics and the Pacers. Good matchup with Holiday, of course, and Halliburton, and the Pelicans and Kings late night. 6 on the college wood, college basketball, including Iowa and Purdue. Last time I saw Purdue, I watched them get beat at Northwestern. That's your number one ranked team in the country. 6 on the ice tonight. College football, of course, we wait. 43 bowl games begin on December 16th, but we do have our Final Four set. We have to wait, boys. It's December 4th as we sit here right now in real time. Got to wait till January 1st. 4 Bama versus 1 Michigan, 1.5 with Michigan laying it. Texas 3, Washington 2 in the Sugar, and Texas is laying 4.5, and then we'll have the college football season conclude on January 8th with the national championship. Okay, so we're set. That's me. Amal Shaw, what say you?
It should be a fun month of December. You mentioned, Thomas, probably not a ton of plays in college basketball. This is a very, very light week. I'm actually kind of glad it won't be as much paying attention to college hoops. Schedule really starts to pick up because so many schools are in finals starting the weekend coming up. But the NFL, guys, I'll tell you what we're going to get into in Like, Love, and Loathe. Kansas City Chiefs going with that Patriots blueprint of not bringing anybody on the perimeter to help Mahomes out. We'll get into that a little bit more later on. I've got some points on that one. But this was, I'll tell you what stood out to me this weekend, Patrick. The San Francisco 49ers went into Philadelphia and just laid down a beatdown.
Yeah, and I think that's where we're going to start as we welcome in the big guy as well. I agree with you there. It's two teams that really don't like each other, but all of a sudden, if you take a look at the standings, boys, NFC, AFC, top seed, wide open at this point because, as Mala mentioned, Niners, Eagles, 42-19. We'll get into the specifics because, obviously, the 49ers, big guy Dustin Sweetelson, we welcome you, starting to look like the best team in football after that drubbing of Philadelphia. I don't know who Dom is. Dom is security for the Eagles. Apparently, he's a legend. He and Drake Greenlaw got into it. You probably know because you're better with this stuff than I. But we say, what's up, big guy? What's going on?
He's their security guy. He's in charge of making sure everything goes fine. But he looks like a guy who thinks he played a big part in them getting to the Super Bowl last year. That's the vibes I got from Dom. Very Turtle from Entourage vibes. Like, I play no part in the success, but I'm going to take all the credit.
You're going to take credit for what?
That without his security, they don't win the NFC a year ago. That he seems like that's his mindset. Also seems like might still live at home with mom and dad, but still might drive like a $70,000 Mercedes. That's the vibe I get from Dom.
Yeah, Dom is Greenlaw kind of booped him in the nose there, and Dom was reaching. I was like, what is this dude? Dude, is he on the coaching staff? And people were tweeting that he is security. So it was weird to say the least. Okay, let's get into it. So Niners, Eagles, and that will take us, boys. We've got, as Amal mentioned, like, love, loathe coming up here on the program from the weekend and week 13. That was, I mean, if you just, I'm top of mind right now. So the Patriots lost a game 6-0. So they've lost three straight games where they've given up 10 points or less, which is disastrous. The Detroit Lions, just top of mind, they were up 21-0 in the first quarter. And then all of a sudden I turn around and that game's tight towards the end. Continue with the Gardner Minshew, absolute superstar run as a backup quarterback. So we'll have plenty to discuss. But the Niners, who started slow in this one, all ripped off, I think it was 5 touchdowns and 5 drives. Maybe I'm shorting them one, but they just went on an absolute roll. 6 straight possessions as far as scoring and 6 straight. Debo with 3 times in the end zone. Brock Purdy, 4 touchdowns. Again, and it's funny with Debo because remember after the NFC Championship game last year, he was tweeting about the fact that if they had Brock, it would have been a different story. They showed and proved, obviously, at the Eagles 42-19 with Brock Purdy. We mentioned the Greenlaw aspect of it. Kind of like the fact that these two teams don't necessarily love each other, but here's the difference in the game. They held Philly under 50 yards rushing, so they outgained Philly on the ground. San Francisco 146-46. What fascinated me was when Hurts got injured and he came back. Like, what was Sirianni doing? Like, this game was untenable at that point. He comes back, but Hurts, it's kind of been a theme all year. Is he banged up or isn't he?
Hey, you're absolutely right about that. I tend to agree with you. No reason to bring him back in. It was 28-13 at that point in the fourth quarter. You don't feel like they had an opportunity to really come back. I thought this game was won by San Francisco in the first quarter when they were struggling on offense and the Eagles were dominating the time of possession in the first quarter, but they hold them to 2 field goals, 26 and 39 yards, and that kept them in the game. I get being down 14 doesn't mean the game is over, but it felt like it gave the 49ers a lot more life. One drive, they take the lead, and then from there, as you alluded to, this team just gets on a tear. 5 consecutive scoring drives. But what a difference this team is when they're healthy. Trent Williams, Debo Samuel. I mean, these guys are absolute difference makers. Not taking anything away from Brock Purdy. And I hear he's in the MVP conversation. I'm not a buyer on that. But to me, when you look around the talent on this team, they are very difficult to beat. And Patrick, you mentioned a minute ago, the AFC and the NFC right now up for grabs. Miami, Jacksonville, Baltimore, all teams with a ton to play for in terms of home field advantage and that crucial bye. Now the Philadelphia Eagles, who missed a golden opportunity yesterday with a victory, could have cemented themselves in the NFC. Now they really have to make sure they play well. This is a team, guys, that could go from potentially the number one overall seed in the NFC to the 5th seed very quickly if they're not careful.
Yeah, we can talk about the machinations as far as the postseason. It's weird for San Francisco too, big guy, because I think they were like -6, -5, -6 as far as total yards first quarter, and then the next 3, they just boat race the Eagles. And the Eagles have the best record in football, but we'll get to the schedule because the next 2 weeks are a bit of a gauntlet. Then it kind of eases up for Philadelphia. But the defense allows touchdowns on 6 straight possessions. They had missed tackles all over the place. The 49ers right now, healthy and clicking, no doubt.
Yeah, let's hear from Jalen Hurts. You guys asked, why did he go back into the game? Reporters kind of had the same question for the Philly quarterback, and here's what he had to say yesterday.
About showing anybody anything, it's more so the game's not over. So, just trying to keep fighting.
And I play that because I listened to all of Nick Sirianni's press conference after the game, guys. And if you look down at your rundown, you will not see a soundbite from Nick Sirianni, because I thought he kind of stunk in the postgame. Not like overtly rude or mean or down, but just didn't really say much. Just said, they were better, they beat us. And I think there's a dichotomy with him, Sirianni, from when they win, they lose. He's a good front runner. He's good at being rah-rah and in your face and letting you know how great they are. When they lose, he's kind of vanilla. Whereas Jalen Hurts is the real leader of that franchise. He's kind of even across the board.
You calling Sirianni a buster?
He is teetering in between that
donk or a buster
line of donk and buster. Like, when he wins, he's only a donk, but when he loses, he goes full buster.
All right. What else from this one? So you take a look at the schedules. So you now have a Philly team that still holds the one seed, right? But they've got, they're at Dallas. Now, also, if you think about it, the Niners put a beat down on the Cowboys, and now they put a beat down on, obviously, Philadelphia at Philly. But you've got a 10-2 Eagles team. They're at Dallas next week. And then Seattle, but then they've got three straight wins if they need them. So they're going to get to 13 because they got the Giants, the Cardinals, and the Giants to close out the year. The assumption is they go 3-0 in those. So 13-2, worst, 13-4, them all, worst case scenario for the Eagles right now. Dallas and Seattle up next.
Yeah, but I think this game against the Cowboys is crucially important for a couple of reasons. Number one, not only for the NFC, because the 49ers now, by virtue of the head-to-head, would wind up ahead of Philadelphia, but more importantly, you win this game. I think, Patrick, Seattle is just not as good as people thought coming into the season. I was not high on this team. I didn't understand the affinity for them. They're sitting at 6-6, and Geno Smith is still the quarterback. Philadelphia wins this game, in my opinion. They're going to win 5 in a row to close out the year, as you alluded to, this schedule. But what an important game. They're dogs on the road against Dallas, but this is going to be not a must win, but an important game. And it's so crucial because you get that one less game in the playoffs. I think that's what's such a key element to getting to the Super Bowl and then the road having to go through Philadelphia.
So check out the NFC and we'll come back and discuss. The NFC right now, the Eagles 10-2, San Francisco 9-3, the Detroit Lions roar 9-3, and Dallas 9-3. After that, everybody, including division leader Atlanta, 6-6 or worse. We'll come back and discuss the NFC, then flip to the AFC. Starting off sharp money here.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, switch to cricket today and get a free Samsung Galaxy A14 5G. After all, you've been good this year, and they think you really, really deserve it. Smile, you're on cricket. Smile, sharp money. VSIN, the Sports Betting Network, as we welcome you back. Oh, a crazy time of the year. I mentioned at the onset, boys, we now do take a little bit of a respite here. We were just talking a little bit about the college football playoff during the break, but you got to wait close to a month, January 1st, for the semifinal games. Bama, of course, Michigan, Texas, Washington. And we do have 43 bowl games this year in total, but not beginning until the 16th of December. So a little bit of a wait there as we get back here. Talking football, of course, on a Football Monday. And we're going through like, love, loathe. Dustin, you had a nice tease that I'm intrigued by. Why don't you go ahead and run it back and then give us your answer for your like.
My like is a player that I believe should be retroactively awarded the Heisman Trophy, because I think the guy who won a trophy playing with him, if you look back on it, might have only won the award because he was playing with him. And I'm talking about Mike Evans. Mike Evans just notched his 10th straight 1,000-yard season. No player in NFL history has had more than six. He has 10 of them. He's 30 years old and still getting it done. I think it's more remarkable when you look back at his career and who's throwing him the football. This year, Baker Mayfield. Last 3 years, Tom Brady. And I think we can make a strong case that perhaps Tom Brady's career was extended because he had a receiver like Mike Evans to throw to. Before that, it was Jameis Winston and Ryan Fitzpatrick, Mike Glennon, Josh McCown, and then back in college, YOLO ball king himself, Johnny Manziel, throwing those 50-50 shots in the middle of the field up for Mike Evans to go up and get it. I think when we look back at what Mike Evans has been able to do to take bad quarterbacks and make them good, I think when we look back at what Johnny Manziel did in winning the Heisman, a lot of the credit should be going to Mike Evans for what he did.
Is it Tampa Bay? You mentioned the quarterbacks. Is it that or Mike Evans? You just mentioned the record breaking 10 straight years. He's going to the Hall of Fame. I can't remember a catch in his career.
I remember against Alabama and Texas A&M,
that's exactly. Yeah, that's not. That's, you just kind of proved my point.
I guess there's validity.
Is there a more nondescript, legitimate, great player across any sport that you just doesn't really register?
Does he just benefit because they're always losing and throwing from behind? But when they had Brady, they weren't always losing. So I don't know. Like the way I look at it.
No, I'm not diminishing him. No. I'm saying he's been amazing. Yet I still, it doesn't. He doesn't register for me.
I think that kind of goes to the final point I had on him was that at 30 years old, this team's going nowhere. They're about to go through a full rebuild. I think that's the realistic thing to do at this point. Contending teams need to start inquiring about trading for him in the offseason because he can still get it done. He can make a young quarterback look good with his catch radius. Like, just get Mike Evans a chance to play for another ring, please, because he's definitely a Hall of Famer.
He may not want to necessarily leave, right? He's in a state with no state income tax. He's got great weather 12 months of the year. And also, he's got the ring. But the only thing I'll push back to Patrick, I thought you made a great point, which is there a single play we can remember? Dustin kind of summarized that perfectly. We remember the play against Alabama more than any play in his career. But the one thing I'll point out, it feels like at the end of his career, I mean, at the end of the season, he's been force-fed the ball. 1,012, 1,035, or the 1,012 is this year, I'm sorry. 1,035, 1,006, 1,001, and 1,051 to get over 1,000 yards. I'm not taking anything away from the accomplishment. But, man, it just seems like, yo, let's get this guy over 1,000 yards.
But I think there's something to it because so many receivers will come on the scene. They'll be really good for 4 or 5 years, and then they kind of go away. Somehow he stayed pretty consistent for 10 straight years.
I give him that. And I agree with you guys. He's a Hall of Famer. But the best point, I think the key to his success has been outside of the 3 years with Tom Brady, the inconsistency at quarterback.
Random ride or die. Dustin, I got my pen out. Am I adding Mike Evans? Because you got super defensive right there.
Oh, I ride with Mike Evans.
No,
Mike Evans,
I can't put him in there because he's too good.
I think Mike Evans could get me to the Pro Bowl. That's how good he is. I can't even throw a spiral.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not putting him in the list because, you know, compared to RG3 and Frank Reich and others, he's too prolific. All right. Good one for your like. Mike Evans, I like that one. Dug deep. Let's go. My love, Shane Steichen. So I'm actually going with the two former Eagles coordinators. I went Gannon and the Cardinals for my like. I saved my love for Shane Steichen. Of course, the Colts rookie head coach, the win total was set at 6.5. Dustin, you were a little higher on this team than most, so I give you props there.
I also thought Anthony Richardson was going to be a quarterback, though.
7-5. 7-5 for the Colts. And again, I have no clue. 7-5, 6.5 season win total coming into it. And you take a look. I mentioned this earlier today, but Campbell, no clue why, 2-1 sitting right now as your potential coach of the year. I mentioned at 9-3, Campbell should be there at 9-3. LaFleur and O'Connell are both in the postseason right now. If it were to start today at 6-6, they've done better coaching jobs than Dan Campbell. And I'm not just crushing Campbell, but the Colts 7-5, four straight wins. They're sitting 7 in the AFC, which is incredible. He took over a team that was 4-12-1, and no disrespect to your boy Frank Reich and Jeff Saturday, but last year the Colts were 30th as far as the ranked offenses, and this year they're 8th. So Steichen, obviously, he lends credence to why people love to go after offensive coordinators to quickly turn around that offense. They haven't had Anthony Richardson, who they used, what, 3 or 4 somewhere in there. They used their first-round draft pick since week 5, and they've been getting it done with Gardner Minshew. It's genuinely befuddling how much they've gotten done here. It really is, if you think about it, because, again, D'Amico Ryans is going to be in the mix. McDaniel is going to be in the mix. We talked about Campbell, Mike Tomlin, Sean McVay. But do you have a number on Shane Steichen as far as coach of the year, big guy? Just curious to see how long it is.
Yeah, it's shortened up a lot. He's down to 5-1.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. All right. A little love there for him. But again, kind of nondescript. It can either of you, if you were forced, look, Shane Steichen just murdered somebody. Could you draw him? Could you even give his features?
I haven't.
Could
even
you
better.
Say what he sounds like? Do you have any vibe on Steichen at all? Is he the Mike Evans of rookie head coaches?
So I have a soundbite here we're going to play from Shane Steichen. I'm going to ask you too. Is he more like Sean McVay or is he more like Jonathan Gannon? Where do you think he falls on that?
Okay.
So we'll see here. Shane Steichen, what has he learned about his team with so many dramatic wins? They have 7-1 score games this year.
Wow. Just the mental toughness. You know what I mean? There's so much back and forth, and there's so much momentum swings in all these games. And just, you know, obviously, if they get a big play, it's like, how do you, you know, bounce back from that? Same thing with us, keeping the momentum. But it's awesome to see our guys fight every single week and just keep finding ways to win. You know what? I think it's just guys believing. You know what I mean? You hear that word a lot, but it is true. I mean, you believe every time you go out, you're going to win the football game, no matter what the circumstances are, no matter what the situation is. You keep fighting and you keep going and you find ways, you know, at the end. If you believe you're going to win, you're going to go out and win a game.
Two answers. One, Gannon, but with more energy.
Yes.
So they came from the same coaching tree. They kind of seem like the same person, but one has a little bit more energy, speaks a little bit more with rapidity. And then two, he looks exactly like Kyle Shanahan's brother.
He does.
You want to roll it back? You guys want to see it again?
I think you nailed it. I couldn't figure out who he looked like. And
as
I think
soon as he
it.
Popped up, I saw Kyle Shanahan.
He looks like him. Do we know where Mike Shanahan was 9 months before Shane Steichen was born?
It was Sacramento, California, so I don't know where they didn't have any.
You know what? Gannon and Steichen kind of looked together. It's what happens to people that have been married for a long time. Whether it's a gay couple or a straight couple, if you're married for 30-plus years, you just start morphing into the other person. You ever notice that?
Well, that's accurate.
Like old people, they all start looking the same. It's like osmosis. It's wild.
Well, we've been doing shows together for like 7 years now. When's my hair going to start to look like yours?
Have we morphed in each other?
Well, I
you know what? There'd be positives and negatives on
actually,
both sides.
You might be morphing into me more than I'm morphing into you lately, which is an issue.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that. I do. Well, we could take positives and negatives. Well,
we're on the same blood pressure pill.
Yeah, we are. It's called a beta blocker for those that want to look it up if you're impressed by bad health. Steichen. But he is my love this week because I was so wrong on a bunch of my projections as far as win totals, boys. But I certainly am all did not have the Colts sitting 7-5.
Do you think Philly misses him?
Just a bit.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. Well, you know, I always see the people in Philadelphia clowning Brian Johnson as their OC. So this doesn't come as much surprise. But Patrick, you said something when we started the show today was right, which is, you know, I talked about D'Amico Ryans, but you're right. Shane Steichen deserves a ton of credit. They're doing it with a career backup quarterback in Gardner Minshew. He is probably in that top three backup quarterback range, but deserves a ton of credit. They lose their starter in Anthony Richardson. Who would have the Colts sitting at 7-5 in arguably the second most competitive division in the AFC?
And Minshew balling out.
Yeah.
So all of that credit has to go to Steichen for coaching him up. We'll continue with Like, Love, Loathe.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, check out the picks, easily sortable. You can follow host and guest, top VSIN experts leaderboard for an introductory offer of just $9.99. So again, get the picks. We'll email them to you every single day, every single pick over at VSIN.com/subscribe. We got you back here on a Monday. Of course, the big drama over the weekend superseded everything, and that was the College Football Committee, of course, with their Final Four. You've got Michigan 1 taking on Bama 4, and then, of course, you've got Texas taking on Washington. To talk about that, one of the best doing it, Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports national college football writer at Dennis Dodd CBS. I know he's traveling, so we do appreciate a few minutes today. And it was almost like the committee for 10 years or so had gotten away unscathed, had dodged some bullets in the past. And then this year, kind of a confluence, a storm, the perfect storm led to this weekend. And of course, the reaction has been wild. I'd love to hear your take on it, Dennis.
That was an abomination. I thought it was absolutely ridiculous. We've been told one thing for the last 25 years since the BCS started. If you're a major conference champion, you're undefeated, you're in. There are no parameters. There's nothing in there about losing healthy players. I understand there's language in the protocol of the CFP about it. But let's talk about this. In 1998, when the BCS debuted, Florida State was deemed good enough to play for a national championship. Florida State was deemed good enough to play for a national championship at the backup quarterback. They didn't win, but they certainly made it via the computers. In 2014, when this thing started, Cardale Jones was the third string quarterback for Ohio State, who led them to a Big Ten championship. So that, to me, is hypocritical. So the only thing I'm left with is, well, they didn't look good enough. And I was stunned by a quote in the ESPN story today, ESPN.com, where one anonymous committee member said, we just didn't think they could win a national championship. Well, isn't that a subjective, something subjective, especially when you've got 30 days, a month, to get your backup quarterback healthy. Apparently he was, Tate Rodemaker, was going to be healthy, and give him a shot at it. I thought it was completely misdirected. Oh, and by the way, Alabama lost a game. Alabama played a game with a third-string quarterback. They looked terrible doing it. They won by double digits. Nobody seems to remember UCF. Nobody seems to remember Auburn, last play of the game. And they certainly don't remember the Texas loss. I thought it was absolutely ridiculous.
I thought, Dennis, you brought up a couple of great points there. I don't understand how the Auburn game is just absolved from Alabama's resume.
Right.
I mean, fourth and 30, give them credit for the miracle, but that's it was a kick six part two. And then let's go back. You mentioned the South Florida game where they barely win with Buckner and Simpson in there at a quarterback. But the fact that Florida State, and I get it was with Jordan Travis in week one, was thoroughly more dominant against a common opponent in LSU than the Crimson Tide were against LSU. I mean, to me, if you're Florida State at this point in time going forward, you sit there and say, well, what are we doing? What are we playing for? I don't understand how you could just catapult the team based on brand. I went to Ohio State. I thought in 2014, I thought TCU should have been in there. I mean, they just seem like they make up their criteria as they go week by week to fit the narrative. And what is your perspective as a guy who's covered this for so long? Is this just simply Alabama's got more cachet?
Well, I think brand has something to do with it. But look, we're talking about Florida State, a national program with multiple national championships. We're not deciding between Alabama and TCU or Cincinnati or somebody like that, or UNLV, let's put it that way. This is Florida State. They're not a second level program. And to have them, you know, have them left out like that. I think this story has moved on. This will never happen again like this because we're going to 12. So the only argument will be about seeding and buys and who's 13 and who's 12. I think the next step to this is we need transparency in this process. ESPN just did a story quoting anonymous committee members. The last time I checked, they weren't even allowed to talk to the media at all while they were committee members. We need to see their votes. Maybe not every week, but maybe. And if they're too scared to do it and afraid of social media trolls, then let somebody else do it. I think they have this secret process, which, by the way, is the most clandestine and least transparent, I think, in the history of sports right now. AP releases their votes. The voters are allowed to tell people who they voted for. At the end of the year, the coaches for years wouldn't release their votes. They do at the end of the season. You know, this looks like Olympic figure skating where nobody has to show their mask. That's what bothers me the most now that this story has moved on.
The great Dennis Dodd joining us, CBS Sports. You used the word abomination. I don't think you're wrong. Also, Dennis on Saturday wrote about league title games never being important again as we go to 12. Just, I can hear the frustration. So I just want to like zoom out and ask you the state of the sport. Where are you with it right now? The transfer portal, the playoff, where are you right now?
Well, not to mention that, you know, we're pretty darn close to paying players or collective bargaining or the NCAA not running things, stuff like that. That's all in play, too. And that's why I'm in town. There's a National Football Foundation dinner tomorrow night. And then the Learfield Intercollegiate Forum is here at the Aria. And there's only about three times a year where everybody, all the stakeholders are under one roof. So that's some of the questions I'll be asking. The game endures. It hit me in the first year of NIL in 2021. You know, oh, the upheaval. On game day, guys, nothing changed. I don't care, and you don't care, if Shedeur Sanders drives a Maybach or has a gold watch. He's a hell of a player. I don't care if J.J. McCarthy – actually, I do care, because J.J. McCarthy gives all his NIL money to charity, or most of it. It's still Ohio State versus Michigan. They're still wearing those colors, and it will endure even through all this crap, all this realignment. Everything else, the stuff we're talking about, the game continues to endure. And these players are still young adults. Their minds and bodies and brains are still forming. And the net result of that is some wild and wacky stuff, mostly pleasurable. 4th and 31 is great. This is great just to talk about. May not be right, may not be fun, but this will go down historically as, you know, I think a dark day, but certainly part of the lure of the sport, frankly.
Dennis, with the new 12-team playoff taking place and with Texas and Oklahoma leaving the Big 12 to go to the SEC, does the college football playoff next year become the ACC, I'm sorry, the Big 10 SEC challenge plus potentially Florida State and Clemson?
I will give you some numbers that we had researched earlier in the season. We went back 9 years and just took it as a 12-team playoff, put the teams in. In the last 9 years, the SEC and Big Ten would have averaged, it's just an average, 7.3 out of 12 every year. There were a couple of years there where they would have had 9 in each, with only 3 at large spots. You know what that means? That means in any given year, if those numbers hold, the remaining 100 teams in FBS will get 4.7 spots on average in the playoff. I don't want to hear about Liberty or SMU. You know where those spots are going to go to? Mostly to the SEC and the Big Ten. Big 12 will be in there. The ACC will be in there. But this is another chapter in those two leagues taking over the earth. Look, it was probably inevitable anyway. That's where the TVs, that's where the advertisers want their money to go. We've just seen it evolving, frankly, for decades. But that's going to be the reality of it. You're going to see a lot of rematches. I'm not even saying that's bad. There would have been a rematch I thought I saw in the 12 projected for this year, I think in the first round. I can't remember. Maybe Ohio State, Ole Miss or something like that. But there's going to be a lot of rematches. We're not going to get what we saw Saturday. Again, it's just all going to be for seeding and buys, and that's that.
Dennis, I know it's a busy time. You gave us exactly what we needed today, so thank you. Of course, you can find Dennis Dodd on Twitter at Dennis.CBS. Read him at CBS Sports. Thank you, Dennis. Appreciate you.
Thank you. All right, bye.
Okay, thank you. And you could hear the frustration in his voice. I wrote down a couple. He said abomination, the subjectivity, and just the tone of his voice. I swear to you, I was laughing a couple times because I expected him to say, "Go play intramurals, brother." It's the Big 12. Like, he was so exasperated. I just wanted him to say, "Go play intramurals, brother."
But, you know, listen, he's not wrong. And the only thing I thought was, if you put Florida State in, the argument would have been that we should not play major non-conference games. That's what Alabama would conclude, right? We're playing in the SEC. We should never play anybody but an FCS opponent or some directional school that we're going to be able to beat by 50 points. That's the only thing I thought was positive by putting the Crimson Tide in. But I can appreciate the consternation that everybody from Tallahassee and Florida State supporters would have.
Yeah, you told me that people were frustrated about this on the weekend or on social media, Dustin. Is that true?
A lot of people with quote-unquote self-proclaimed high moral character were angry FSU's out.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, college bowl season is here, and VSiN has an early Christmas present for you. If you're not a VSiN Pro subscriber yet, it's no problem. We're going to give away this year's college bowl betting guide to everyone. We have spreads, totals, and expert picks from the Golics, Steve Mackinnon, and Brent Musburger for every single bowl game. Put a bow on this year's bowl season and get a free copy of your VSiN College Football Bowl Betting Guide absolutely for free. Visit VSiN.com/bowl guide and and get your free copy today. Okay, a lot to do. Amal Shah, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. We're presented by BetMGM. This is Sharp Money. Our buddy Steve Fezzik, professional handicapper. Now, again, when we're talking about the contest, he won back-to-back, kind of like Johnny Chan with the biggest poker tournament in the world. The Super Contest back in the day, Fezzik went back-to-back. However, this has, what, 5,300, circa millions, 5,300 entries. So we've been talking about contests and strategy. We'll get to your notes that you sent over today as well. Speaking of contests, Survivor. So the Survivor contest at Circa is down to 56 contestants with 24 on the Jags. Fez, how many do you think, how many contestants do you think win Survivor this year?
Three. Let me walk you through the math. So going into tomorrow, I'm going to assume we got 51 people left now. The purists out there are going to say that's impossible, Fez. It's either going to be 56 or 34, but the Jags win about 80% of the time. So call it 51. Every 2 weeks, we're going to lose a little more than half the field, assuming a win rate each game of about 64%. Now, early in the year, it's higher, but now a lot of people are running out of good teams left to play, so their win rates are going to go down. So if I chop that 51, 2 weeks from now, it'll probably be about 22 people. Another 2 weeks from now, it'll be about 9 people. Final 2 weeks, I'm going to assume people will be running out of good teams to play. That 9 becomes a 3. We'll make the over-under under 3.5 minus 130. Anyone want to bet over or under against me? What do you think?
Would you say about the 130?
Over 3.5. I'm going to say under 3.5 is a small favorite. I'll set the number 3.5 for winners. You want to go over or under 3.5 winners?
The tie for the win?
That's right.
Under.
You want to go under 3.5.
Right, I'm going to go over. It's a good number.
Set a good number then. Like I said, I think the under is a moderate favorite. But just a small one.
I think the real challenge, and I think why Steve's number is really good, is because when you look around, so many of these teams outside of the Christmas Day situation where people might have saved Kansas City facing off against the Raiders or the Eagles against the Giants, I'm pretty sure people would probably use San Francisco, Dallas. And then one other thing that stands out, guys, based whether it be on injury or lack of consistency, there's no other team you look at in the NFL now and you sit there and go, wow, that team's going to be a lock against any opponent. I mean, the Ravens have the Rams this weekend. 10 weeks ago, you would have said, that's a play on the Ravens. But I don't think you have the same confidence in Baltimore at this point in time that you would have had about six, seven weeks ago against the Rams.
Yeah, you only have one no-brainer, Miami, laying 13 against the Titans this week. That's pretty much it this week. Every other team is very vulnerable, right?
Steve, question for you about the contest, and then we'll move on to week 13 takeaways. Also, a great note in your notes about why lane 3 with San Francisco was a bad play. I want to ask you this. So as you get to crunch time, 5 weeks to go, circa millions, a lot of money, obviously $1 million on the line. Is there a person in particular, of course, your wife and son, they know what's going on, but is there a person in particular you show your card to, you show your plays to each week just to kind of run it by them, or is this all on you?
It's all on me, but the irony to this is that I'm reading everything I can from everyone, including but not limited to, like, if you asked me, like, at VEASAN, who should I read? I'd be like, I'm biased. Everyone's going to get mad at me, but I'll say, like, these former professional athletes, let me just say this. You never hear, or people that are in mainstream media, you never hear ESPN host quits job to become a professional gambler. All right. That just doesn't happen typically. Although Mr. Kazarian, I'm sorry. I know you absolutely could do it. So let me throw that out there. And you certainly don't hear ever headline former professional football player making a killing betting for a living. Okay. So I understand they're very entertaining and they great content, but give me a Steve Mackinnon or an Adam Burke over any former professional athlete. Now the former professional athlete should be better. He has more inside information on how everything works, but you know what? He's been taught the colors wrong. As when he's playing, he wants to bet on the premium best teams, and typically that's not where the value is.
I think, Patrick, Steve brings up a great point in the sense that, like, the point spread is the great equalizer in our business, right? On paper, Miami's going to destroy Tennessee next week, but all of a sudden you sit there and say now they're getting potentially 14 points by the time we get to kickoff. It changes how a player is looking at a game compared to how all of us as bettors would look at it.
So you mentioned in your notes, let's discuss why San Francisco laying three was a bad bet. Now, again, for a general bettor or a new bettor, they'd look and say, wait, the 49ers won 42-19. But Steve, I think this is a tremendous opportunity for you to teach a little lesson here. If you were laying the three with the Niners, that's a no-go.
Yeah, so and full disclosure, I only like talking about bets I win. All right, don't like talking about bets I lost. So and I'll give Will Hill credit to, on this one. He sends me a very innocuous text. He's like, 49ers minus one, you know, just without any explanation. This is like late Sunday night. And I'm like, oh, that's right. This is the revenge game. Niners are the best team in the NFL. They lost Purdy last year in the playoffs. They got rolled. Their only touchdown was when, you know, C-Mac ran over somebody. But that's very forgivable because Purdy had to come back in. They didn't have a quarterback. And Philly's going through their gauntlet of five straight tough opponents. And their opponents have been short-circuiting like Kansas City, giving away these games. Of course, San Francisco was a good bet at Pick'em and at minus one and at minus two. And, of course, if we go back in our time machine, of course, if they replayed, I would lay three in a second. I would lay seven, probably, given the way that that game played out. But the bottom line is, you can't be laying three on a game like that. That's a game you got to lay pick, and minus one and minus two. Okay, minus two and a half is like, that's, you should be the last one in at that point. If you lay three, you're not working hard enough. You're spending too much time on East Carolina and college basketball. You need to be a little more focused to get to these games before those big moves. And everyone that's like, oh, Fez, you have no idea what you're doing. It was a clear-cut right side, even at minus three. I could make the same exact case about the Oregon-Washington game. If Oregon had won that game by 30, we'd be like, oh, it was so obvious. Oregon outplayed them the first time they played. They were on the road, and now Oregon's been going up. Washington's been going down. Penix isn't healthy. Washington only has 6 days to prepare. And so if Oregon had won that game by 24, you'd be like, oh, I didn't. What did it matter? I lay six with Oregon or eight or 10. They were the clear-cut right side, except for they lost the game outright. And it happens. There's the ball is shaped weird. And these are human beings we're talked about. And there's a certain level of unpredictability and uncontrollable, predictable events that happen with any football game.
So when you say it was a bad bet on the Niners, forget the result of the game, just because the number was at three and it was available last Sunday or Monday at minus one or two.
Sharp fifth grader who analyzed this game on Sunday night concludes Niners. There's no other way. So nothing changes. No injury reports. Nothing changes all week long. And it goes to three. And then people come out and say, I like San Francisco minus three. Well, what the heck are you doing all week? You know, you just, I mean, what were you doing on Sunday night and Monday? Just, you know, other than screwing around with college basketball, you got to get to those numbers earlier.
But just to expand upon that, you talk about this all the time, and I think it's a great point that he brings up, Patrick, which is you should be looking at the games for a week in advance, right? So when the Sunday night lines come out, you have an opportunity to jump on them well before the adjustment or the number settles in.
Right. Now, if you're betting 10,000 or 100,000 a game as a syndicate, I understand you can't bet, you can't tip your hand too early because the lines will move. But I would say, and this will be controversial, the numbers just came out for week 14 and people are like, I'm doing my homework early. I'm going to get ahead of the lines. You know what? And I'm going to give this advice. Forget week 14. It's too late. Lines have already moved. Go to week 15. Those lines, those look-ahead lines, are going to show up tomorrow at noon, and they're going to be wrong. They're going to be very, very wrong all week long. I'd focus on week 15 instead of week 14.
safe to say somebody laying, minus three with the 49ers offends Steve Fezzik's sensibilities, which brings me back to years ago. I took away from our conversations, I'm like, you know, I'm convinced that professional handicappers like Steve, they're more concerned about getting the best of the number than winning their bets sometimes. Now, obviously, that's not. But over the long run, being concerned with getting the best of the number is a good practice, to be fair.
Yeah. And people, there's a myth out there that like we're all like smoking our cigars as part of the sharp guy union. And we're all reaching conclusion that this is the right side or the wrong side. And people think that's how these pros win. I'll use an example. My buddy, the Hitman, all right, at Hitman 428, all right? You wouldn't believe me if I told you what he's won this year in his betting, Patrick, but he's making a good lawyer salary. And you know what he is midweek with his best bet that he gives out on a podcast? He's 1-11. You can't make this up. And he genuinely is trying his best. But you know what? He'd be the first to tell you it's an NFL side midweek at one point in time. All my bets are like, as soon as like injury reports come in or guys don't practice and like, I'm like firing. It's like a scavenger hunt. I'm getting to a number before anybody else as quickly as I can. And especially on props.
Sports betting, where somebody that's really smart, like the gentleman you call the hitman, can make a lawyer salary and call himself the hitman. That is sport. That is sports betting. That's either softball or sports betting. But, you know, that is a hat tip to the hitman who's killing it this year. We continue with Steve Fezzik, who's also killing it next year. Sharp Money.